6 minutes after 1 o'clock. It's Monday, the first day of March. And didn't come in like a lion here, but all over the other. If you live up in the East Coast and Northeast, they got hammered again. And on the West Coast of Europe, they've had horrible weather. And I won't even mention what happened in Chile. That turned out to be a mess, too. That's unbelievable. We're going to see if we could get Mitch Batros. We couldn't get him on today, but, you know, he does the Earth Changes Report. And we were going to see if we could get a hold of him tonight to see if he wanted to talk about the swarm. I know. Geologists say, no, it's not a swarm. So we've had all these earthquakes, and we had a meteorite smash into Mexico, et cetera, et cetera. But nevertheless, he's saying, hey, you think this is interesting? Just wait. Well, that worked, too. 7 minutes after 1 o'clock, 303-713-8585, the number, as we continue, of course. We've got a double lineup tonight coming up 3 o'clock here live in the studio, Tim the Car Guy Hop. Tim, of course, from TH. He is TH Automotive with all your automotive questions. So this is the first Monday, of course. First Monday, indeed. First day, first Monday. So Tim will be with us coming up at 3 o'clock. We're going to join up with DeTracy Regula. She is a goddess of Isis worship. Well, that is that she's a priestess of the goddess Isis. She's a priestess, and she's written a book called Shaking the Sistrum. Don't talk about, you know, the old gods coming back. People say, well, they never really left. Well, we'll have DeTracy Regula coming up momentarily. But first off, and we continue. All right, let's... All right. Well, let's see here. We'll have to do without the There we are. Okay, it all works now. If today's your birthday, happy birthday! Glenn Miller was born on this date in 1904. The band leader David Niven, great actor David Niven, among other things. He's done so many movies. One hesitates to pick which one, but David Niven, born on this date in 1910. Yitzhak Rabin, the former British, or that is Israeli Prime Minister, was born in 1922. And also Deke Slayton, the astronaut, born in 1924. Robert Clary, remember he was on Hogan's Heroes? Robert Clary was born in the state in 1926. Pete Rozelle, 1926 on this date. Harry Belafonte, great, you know, he was such a wonderful singer. Harry Belafonte, born in 1927. Robert Conrad, the actor, born in 1935. Also, let's see, Roger Daltrey of The Who was born on this date in 1944. Mike Diabo from Manfred Mann was born in 1944. Dirk Benedict, A-Team, Battlestar Galactica, among others, was born in 1945. Alan Thicke has been around forever, it seems like. He's an actor, a songwriter. He wrote themes for TV's Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, but he's also done some great funny stuff. Alan Thicke was born in 1947. He did a talk show for a while, too. Ronnie Howard, little Ronnie Howard, Opie. Yeah, that guy. Remember, he did, of course, Andy Griffith Show and Happy Days, and now has directed so many great movies. Ron Howard, born in 1954. Catherine Bach, the actress, among other things. She did Dukes of Hazzard. Born in 1954, and let's see, there's one more here worth noting, and let's see, where is it? We got, well, that's it. That'll have to do. The rest are all unknowns. 303-713-8585, the number. So the old gods never went away. They're just kind of laid down for a while. But my guest, DeTracy Regula, is a priestess of Isis and has been a student of sacred science since childhood. She talks about the mystical through writing, travel, art. She's best known as the author of The Mysteries of Isis, which has, by the way, been a bestseller in the occult classics. Her latest one, by the way, is called Shaking the Sistrum. DeTracy Regula, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
And thank you so kindly for being with.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I was enjoying actually listening to your birthday list there because it was my birthday on Saturday.
Well, happy birthday.
I got to hear some near birthday mates there, too.
Near birthdays.
Yes, I agree with you about David Niven. What an amazing actor he
was. It was great fun to watch. He still is, even now. I love all his old movies. Well, of course, you know, I mean, back in the black and white days, back in the 30s, his stuff was you know, great fun to watch. And, of course, you know, right through the 40s and the 50s and, I guess, early 60s, too. So.
Yeah, I was, as a matter of fact, I was just looking at one of his biographies, Bring on the Empty Horses, recently. And so he's very fresh in my mind at this moment.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun to watch. First of all, tell us the old gods. Isis, of course, was, you know, it was, had been a goddess of Egypt. And the Romans adopted her, too. But for at least 3,000 years, Isis has been around.
More like 6,000, at least by my count, and of course that's debatable because when you get into prehistoric times in Egypt, it's hard to tell which deities were really prevalent at that time, but some of the later Isis symbolism certainly shows up in pre-dynastic times. So that gives us a comfortable date of about 3,000 BCE, so it's hard to tell for sure. And of course, a lot of people take a more mystical view of Isis and see her as having Atlantean connections or alien connections or many other ways of looking at her. But for historic purposes, I would say, you know, we're looking at a goddess who's enjoyed worship for at least 5,000 or 6,000 years.
Yeah, a lot of people say, well, the old gods are gone. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't think the old gods are gone. I think certainly that there are different times where one or another divinity will be, you know, most powerful and most widely worshipped and acknowledged. But these things have tides, and there are certain times when different divinities kind of come to the forefront of our consciousness, and then they may retreat and recede. And I believe that all religions have something very important to offer humankind, and obviously for the last couple of thousand years, it's been kind of under different management, and it seems like now we're enjoying a real renaissance of a more polytheistic look at the divinity.
Yeah, a lot of people say that Isis actually was sort of a template for, I suppose if you look at it, Mary, that is the mother of Jesus. Do you think that, that her influence in that part of the world is back? Well, I mean, within the Greco-Roman period, certainly within the Roman period, that fits that Isis was kind of the model after which a lot of other women in the what ultimately became the church was modeled.
Well, there's no question that there was a lot of influence from the faith of Isis on certain aspects of the Christian faith, and that's probably easiest to see in the figure of Mary. I'm not saying that they're identical, and I'm certainly not saying that the one is divine and the other isn't or anything like that, but certainly the language used to describe Mary in many cases took titles directly from Isis. The Catholic Encyclopedia, as a matter of fact, lists something like 100 titles that are shared both by Mary and Isis, Star of the Sea, Mother of God, many, many others that are shared by both. And I think certainly as things developed, there was a transference, probably partially conscious, of some of the titles of Isis into the veneration of Mary to make that transition a little bit easier. You know, you have people that are worshiping a deity under certain aspects and titles, and if you want to get their interest and make their transition into your faith easier, you start using some of the same terminology.
Yeah. The story about Isis, and which is interesting, some say it was also the reason why the pharaonic families, brothers and sisters, often married. And was because that she was married to her brother Osiris. Is that true? I mean, was that the model that in order to be divine, and of course the pharaohs regarded themselves as being gods, was that why that they ended up marrying their brothers and sisters?
I'm certain in some cases, they may have been consciously following a divine model. In other cases, it may have been for much more practical reasons of dynastic succession and sort of keeping everything in the family, so to speak. But if you look at a lot of ancient myths, you frequently see that the gods and goddesses are related to each other, and then they're kind of paired off into different combinations. And it's quite possible that that was the model for the pharaonic brother and sister marriage, which we see a lot of.
Mm. Yeah, I guess one of the parts of the story that makes it worth is that, who was it, Set? And I guess Set was what, his brother? Osiris's brother, and her, therefore her brother?
Yes, exactly. Basically, there were five divinities that were considered to be the children of Nut and Geb, which were like the previous generation of the divine in Egypt. And those were Isis and Osiris, Nephthys and Set, and Horus, who is, Horus is kind of an awkward subject because he's supposed to be one of the five children of Nut, but he's also supposed to be the son of Isis and Osiris. So it gets a little tricky there.
Yeah, very, very tricky there.
Very tricky, yes. But, you know, you have these all of these divine children that are born at a single moment, and those create some different stresses and, shall we say, family tensions.
Hmm.
The story is that Set actually broke through the womb of Nut and came out first, and so was considered to be the firstborn. And because he was the firstborn, he felt that he had the right to Isis as his mate. And Isis and Osiris were said to have loved each other from the start, so immediately you've got some divine tensions going on from the very beginning. And of course, that led to a great conflict and ultimately the death of Osiris at the hands of Set.
Hmm. How is it that you get to be a high priestess of this cult, and a lot of people saying, is there such a thing as an ISIS cult that's active today? How did you get to come to this?
Well, certainly. First of all, I have to say that, you know, using the term cult these days, it carries all sorts of negative connotations, which we don't see. I prefer to call it the Faith of Isis, and of course, one of the organizations that I'm involved with, the Temple of Isis, is a federally recognized church, and so we're not exactly a cult. We don't want to think that people are you know, turning over all their worldly goods to us and living in poverty for our sake or whatever. That's not the Faith of Isis today at all. We're very much promoting individuality, personal empowerment, and free thinking. So that terminology is one that I try to avoid. So it's actually, if you look at the etymology of the word cult just simply means the veneration of a specific deity and doesn't have all this negative garbage attached to it.
All right, hold on a second. We're going to take a quick break. To Tracy Regula, the goddess Isis. She is a high priestess of the goddess Isis. And what does a high priestess do? When we come back, we'll try to make some sense of all of that. We continue on News Radio 850 KOA. Degrees, and it's very light snow, very light going on right now. Look like today it's going to be off and on snow showers. Temperature is going to get in the mid-30s, which means nothing's going to stick to the ground, but it's just going to be wet. But for tomorrow, coming up for Tuesday, it's going to be mostly sunny and temperatures in the low 50s, so all things put together, it looks like we're going to have pretty nice weather. It's seasonal, I think, is the word they usually use. But again, right now it's 31 degrees. That's officially going on at the airport. Meanwhile, back again with our guest, Tracy Regula, talking about the goddess Isis. What does a priestess do exactly?
Well, that depends a lot on the priestess. For me, what I do is I attend a lot of events that pertain to Isis. I also run a correspondence course for students, and I do a lot of work with the International Fellowship of ISIS, which is an organization that was founded in Ireland back in 1972 and has about 30,000 members worldwide. There are many convocations and conventions pertaining to that. And I also work with the Temple of ISIS up in Geyserville, California, where we offer, you know, regular Sunday services and workshops and many other events and study opportunities for those interested in ISIS.
Are there temples still? I mean, other than the one that's in Egypt, is there any temples as we speak today around the world?
Absolutely. Certainly, you know, there is our temple up at ISIS Oasis in Geyserville. We have actually two temples there, a small chapel and a grand temple. And, of course, you know, there was not just one temple of ISIS in Egypt. There were, you know, a number of them. And then, of course, there were literally hundreds of temples and shrines outside of Egypt throughout the Greco-Roman world. And actually, almost anyone of European ancestry probably had an ancestor that was a worshiper of ISIS at some point, because she did have temples in England, Germany, France, Spain, Portugal, throughout Greece, Turkey, and many, many other places. So you may have an ISIS worshiper in your past yourself, Rick.
Oh, anything's possible in my family. What exactly, for those who don't understand anything about this, and, you know, what is the belief system? And I'm not so sure I understand it. I mean, I know what she was the goddess of, but how does it all work? I mean, what exactly is ISIS supposed to be able to do, and what do you do in support of it?
Well, one of ISIS's titles is the goddess of 10,000 names. And I think that gives kind of an indication of the scope. It's been said that of all the ancient goddesses, that Isis was probably the most vast and most fully developed, in that she had aspects that dealt with virtually every area of human endeavor. She was said to be the creator of crops and gardening, of grafting fruit trees, of navigation, of magic and healing, of medicine and of science. There's no conflict in the faith of ISIS between science and religion, which we sometimes find in some other faiths. She was said to have presided over the university at Alexandria, Egypt, which was at that time the foremost seat of learning in the entire world. And many, you know, philosophers and scientists of that time followed ISIS.
Is there any relationship to ISIS and Hathor?
Certainly. Actually, sometimes they can be confused. Sometimes in my lectures, I refer to Hathor as kind of ISIS before she got married. You know, Hathor is considered to be the goddess of love and pleasure, a little bit more lighthearted approach to life, whereas ISIS, being the goddess of the throne, the goddess of behind the pharaoh, takes things a bit more seriously because she has to. But Hathor and Isis, in their depictions in ancient Egypt, are often extremely similar. And they are also often found in the same temple site, such as the major temple complex of Hathor at Dendera, also has a temple of Isis there as well.
So in the ancient world, she was sort of an all-around everything goddess, although Lord knows there were so many gods and goddesses within the Egyptian pantheon. But what about her that made her so popular that not only did the Egyptians embrace her, but the Romans did, the Greeks did, the Persians did? Everybody kind of went nuts for Isis.
No, that's a very good question, and I think the answer is that of almost all the ancient deities, Isis had that human touch. There was a sense that there was a real relationship between Isis and her worshippers, and this was, you know, documented in, you know, some of the writings at the time, that there was something about Isis that made her worshipers feel that she was really connected with them. And I feel that, of course, you know, now in the present day. But one of those 10,000 titles was The One Who Hears. And there was a belief that whereas with some other deities they might or might not get back to you about that prayer you made, the sense was that Isis did hear and did answer. And so in a very deep way, a lot of the worshipers of Isis felt they really had a personal relationship with their divinity to a degree that was much stronger than with many of the other gods and goddesses of the time. Also, as her worship spread out of Egypt, one development was that they had daily rites that the public could attend. And most of the big temples of say, the Greek gods, they would have, you know, a couple festival days a year, but there was nothing that people went to every day. With the temples of Isis, there were, you know, daily rites that you would attend if you wanted to. And so there was the chance to build a really enduring daily relationship with the divine. And that was different from the other gods and goddesses. She was much more accessible. And so I think that was a big factor in why she became so popular.
Up to the point of the establishment of what is now called the Christian Church,
mm-hmm.
you know, which, of course, was about, what, in the 4th century A.D., give or take a couple of decades. Was Isis still popular after that?
Well, certainly in the beginning of the Christian era, Isis was actually quite competitive with the rise of Christianity because some of what she offered was very similar to what the Christian faith also offered, the sense of someone guiding you through the afterlife, the sense of spiritual salvation. One of Isis's titles was Isis the Savior, Isis the one who saves from distress, the Isis, you know, goddess of the underworld. So you had a lot of aspects of Isis which were offering something similar to certain aspects of the Christian faith. But, of course, you know, some of the once a faith really becomes ascendant, it often turns to closing down the other faiths, and that certainly, unfortunately, did happen in many places, that the temples of Isis and other divinities were closed by force.
The old, of course, over time, everything changes in the pronunciation, but what was her real name in Egypt at the time?
Well, if you go back to the Old Kingdom times, it was probably pronounced something like Waset or Oset. And then, of course, it changed over time. There's still a lot of debate on exactly how ancient Egyptian was pronounced, and there's some debate over whether the there's a particle, a little cake shape, that's attached to female names in ancient Egyptian, and it's usually given a sound value of T, so you get that Auset or Waset sound. But there's some debate as to whether or not that was actually pronounced, so it may have actually been said as Oze or Ize, which then in Greek became Isis.
Yeah, and the reason I ask that is because I always thought that the original word, whatever that may have been, the way it was pronounced by its people, in the ancient world, words had power.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to invoke the power of the god or the goddess to say it properly was very important in those days, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And certainly, you know, that's one aspect that we try to recreate if we're, you know, pursuing a strictly Egyptian form of worship for Isis. But it is difficult because we simply don't have the materials that we need to recreate it precisely.
Hmm.
A lot of what we get is from Coptic, which is a survival of an ancient Egyptian dialect into the present day, which is still used in the Ethiopian Christian Church, the Coptic Church.
Right.
And that gives us something to go on, but that is a late survival of Egyptian anyway, and so it's hard to take from that and extrapolate backwards and say, oh, well, this is exactly how it was pronounced in 3000 BCE. So it's an ongoing struggle to define exactly how these things were pronounced.
Have you been to Egypt? I gather, I'm just reading some material here about the most important sanctuaries, one at Giza and the other one was at on the Delta.
Yes, there's some. A lot of people believe that Isis worship actually arose in the Delta. One of her oldest temples in that area was at Sebennytos, and there are some that believe that that was the first place that she was actually worshipped in Egypt.
And that goes back to 3000 BC, give or take?
It's hard in the Delta because things don't hold up as well because you're in an area that is a repeatedly flooding region.
Right.
So we know that she was worshipped from very ancient times there because of other records, but the actual artifacts in the Delta region are more minimal than we would like. Probably her biggest surviving temple is that of Philae, which, of course, is in the southern part of Egypt.
Yeah, and that has the recognizable construction of, what, pylons and all that jazz?
Yes, it does, and yeah. Actually it was the subject of a major engineering marvel when it was moved from one island to another during the construction of the Aswan Dam.
And I guess they also moved, Ramses, his giant megalith there on the side of the cliff?
Yes, they moved several.
They moved a whole lot of stuff, didn't they?
They moved several things. Philae was probably the most dramatic and the most difficult.
Huh.
And it's interesting because the person that really made that possible was Jacqueline Kennedy. She took a particular interest in the fate of Philae.
Why?
And by a personal phone tree effort, she really made it possible for that temple to be preserved.
Hmm. All right, hold on a second. To Tracy Regula, Shaking the Sistrum, we'll talk about the book. By the way, a lot of people are saying, what's a sistrum?
Yes, I will be glad to enlighten them.
All right, very good indeed. As we continue, 303-713-8585, the number. I'm Rick Barber. You're listening to News Radio 850 KOA. As we continue, 303-713-8585, the number, music by Joe Jackson, in case you thought you recognized that, you were right. Meanwhile, back again with DeTracy Regula and goddess worship of Isis. She is a high priestess of the goddess. All right, Shaking the Sistrum is your latest one. Of course, you also did the book about Isis. But for those who don't know, what is a sistrum?
Is an ancient Egyptian ritual musical instrument. It's a type of metal rattle which is believed to bless, sanctify, and purify when it's shaken. It's also considered to shake up the energies, to bring about change, and to elevate consciousness by its very sound. And I've been fascinated with these for many years, ever since I got my hands on my first sistrum when I was preparing items when I was being ordained. I made one out of copper sheet metal at that time, which was also my ordination into being a metal worker. And ever since then, I've just loved and collected these from all over the world. And I finally put together what I've discovered about them into a book. So that's a little bit about the sistrum. But they're really regarded as a method of manifesting the goddess into a space. And I actually have several of them here if you'd like to hear one shaken.
Yeah, let's hear one of those. Sounds almost like a Native American kind of rattle.
Well, it's very interesting because while these were, you know, definitely an Egyptian item, there is at least one or two American Indian tribes that use them. One of those is the Yaqui Indians of, you know, the southern portion of the United States and northern Mexico. And they actually have sistra made out of deer horns and with the shakers on wires strung between the deer horns. And it's quite fascinating because apparently those came to the Yaquis as a survival in Spain of Isis worship that had somehow gotten into being used as a sound maker to control cattle and horses. So it's a very interesting history that actually, but actually does go all the way back to the worship of Isis in that area.
So it was brought over by the Spaniards.
Right, and apparently, at least this is the theory, and apparently it was incorporated by the Yaqui.
So, given that it's...
They find Isis in some very odd places.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds, yeah, it sounds like it's traveled everywhere, hasn't it?
Well, you know, one of my hobbies is finding Isis in unexpected places, and that certainly is one of them.
And like the Yaquis... So is ISIS coming back? I mean, is that the idea? I mean, we want to see a lot more of this kind of thing?
Well, certainly, when I first started becoming involved in the worship of ISIS many years ago, there wasn't much out there about ISIS. And so that's why I wrote my own book, was because I was doing a lot of research trying to find out more about this divinity that was so fascinating to me and so spiritually fulfilling, and there really wasn't a lot in one place for people to find. And so my book, The Mysteries of Isis, grew out of my own direct researches at that time. But now, if you were to go into become interested in Isis, there are many good books out there. You know, I like to think mine is one of them, but there are many others that are very good about Isis worship. And so I would say it definitely is on the upswing.
What is the explanation for that, do you think? I mean, after all this time?
Well, I think she answers the need. Certainly, as women's consciousness has risen, I think a lot of women have looked to goddesses in addition to the more traditional male gods. But there's certainly a lot of men that find a very satisfying spiritual relationship with Isis as well, too.
I think I'd like Hathor better. She sounds like more fun to me, you know.
Well, that's possible, but you have to remember also that Isis, especially in the Greco-Roman world, did become combined with many other divinities. There was definitely Isis Aphrodite and Isis Venus as well. So Isis can be a very emotionally engaging goddess, whether you're a man or a woman.
And you've been involved with this ever since you were a kid, right?
Well, since I was about 18. I, you know, went through the usual period of spiritual seeking in my teens. I had been raised kind of marginally Christian and didn't feel very content in that area, in part because I did have, you know, some psychic experiences that didn't really seem to find a place in traditional Christianity, and yet I didn't believe that they were evil, which was kind of the thinking at that time, that if you had psychic experiences, they were the work of the devil or whatever. Mm. And so I was, you know, actively looking. But it seemed to me that almost every faith that I encountered required me to give up something. You know, if I were to go more deeply into Christianity, it seemed like I had to stop thinking in certain areas and, you know, stop feeling in others. Some of the other Eastern faiths were very ascetic. That didn't appeal to me. And it was really when I encountered the name of Isis and something of her worship, which I found in the works of a famous British mystic, Dion Fortune, I just felt that I'd finally found a religious path that was bigger than I was, that whatever I was, I could fit into it without cutting off my head and stopping thinking or cutting out my heart and stopping feeling. I really felt that here was something that could contain all of me and still leave me all this room to grow. And that feeling has endured for years.
And how long have you been doing this?
Well, since I was 18. So it's several decades of of devotion to ISIS.
Do you get a lot more, shall we say, attention paid here in this country or somewhere else when it comes to this?
Well, I think there's interest worldwide. I just got back from Brazil last week, where I attended a conference called the Encontro de Nova Consciência, which roughly translated is the Encounter with New Consciousness. And there were, you know, hundreds of people at that event. And I presented to them various things about ISIS. I had, I think, six lectures down there. And, you know, there was just this avid amount of attention. Here I was in northeastern Brazil and kind of a small city off the beaten track, Campina Grande. And, you know, I'm looking out at hundreds of people fascinated, at least to hear what I had to say about ISIS. And I've encountered the same thing in Britain and other places. I did a major tour of Japan with the founders of the Fellowship of ISIS, who is a remarkable 93-year-old woman named Olivia Robertson. You know, we were very warmly welcomed by worshippers of ISIS in Japan. So it's certainly not just an American phenomenon. It seems like she's speaking all over the world once again to those that find a certain special satisfaction in following in her ways.
Do you find that a lot of people in Western, well, more specifically in modern Christian culture, regard you as is demonic somehow or weird?
Well, I'm not sure about weird. Probably a few people do. I think the automatic knee-jerk reaction that anyone that is involved in a less well-known faith is dealing with something demonic has probably diminished over the years. I know when I first started in the worship of ISIS, it probably was a little bit more frequent that people would go, oh, you know, it's demonic, or at least deranged.
Yeah.
So I think that has calmed down a little bit, but you know, there's always going to be people that are afraid of what they don't understand, and that's something that we always have to contend with. And I try to deal with it simply by being as upfront as I possibly can be. And most people, when they see that I am generally trying to be a good person, think, well, maybe it's not really that bad.
All right, hold on a second, DeTracy. DeTracy Regula, a goddess, ISIS worship, Shaking the System, the name of the book, as we continue heading up toward the top on News Radio 850 KOA.
Mother's wheelchair stays out in the hall. Why should she go out when the TV's on? Whatever moves beyond these walls, she'll know the facts when Sunday. If you want to know how to play guitar, if you want to know about any other suckers,
home is a place we can explore our roots. It's also where, this time of year, cabin fever can set in, which means it's time to get out and come to Furniture Row. Right now, we're in the final days of our President's Day sale
and
2 years no interest offer.
Getting rid of stuff you don't need, like big electric bills. That's right, summer comes along and everyone's at home using power. The AC's running strong, refrigerators are working overtime. Well, this year, throw out those big electric bills and replace them with clean solar.
Days, you can get great sale prices plus 2 years financing with no interest, with no down payment required. Furniture Row's President's Day sale and 2 years no interest offer ends Wednesday, March 10th. Finance offer is subject to credit approval and minimum purchase requirements. See store for details. All along the Front Range, Aurora, Tocono, Denver, Lakewood, and Lone Tree, just west of Park Meadows. Visit us online at FurnitureRow.com.
Spring is here, and that means spring cleaning. Getting rid of stuff you don't need, like big electric bills. That's right, summer comes along, and everyone's at home using power. The AC's running strong, refrigerators are working overtime. Well, this year, throw out those big electric bills and replace them with clean solar savings from SolarCity. And you know what? You can afford it. With a SolarCity solar lease, installation is free and it's zero down. There's no upfront cost, just a low monthly payment that can actually be up to 15% less than what you're paying now for electricity. But you have to act now or you could miss the big summer solar season when the days are long and your SolarCity system is spinning your electric meter backward. Find out how much you can save with our zero down 20-year lease. There's no payment due at lease sign-in. For more information, visit SolarCity.com or call 877-525-SOLAR. That's 877-525-SOLAR. SolarCity, we're changing the world. Mother's wheelchair stays out in the hall. Her
Why should she go out when the TV's on? Whatever moves beyond these walls, she'll know the facts when Sunday comes along.
1:55 as we head up toward the top, and of course a news update with Joe Chiaro. Meanwhile, back again with our guest, DeTracy Regula. She is a priestess of the goddess Isis, and... And how much do you think that this is catching on as far as being a kind of a rejuvenation of the old gods and goddesses?
Well, if you look at the entire scope of the more ancient faiths that seem to be enjoying something of a renaissance right now, most people put it probably about 1% of the population here in the United States is. Involved to a substantial degree in a faith involving one of the ancient divinities. So it's quite a few people, certainly, you know, maybe 2 to 3 million easily, and probably many more that have at least some interest or have been active at some time in their lives with the ancient divinities.
Do you ever talk to other theologians, people, you know, and priests or rabbis about this?
On occasion I do. Certainly the event that I attended in Brazil, there were, you know, religious representatives of all kinds. I spoke with Buddhist priest who was very welcoming of the idea of the divine feminine. And shared a cab with a Presbyterian bishop. And
how'd that work out?
It worked out fine.
Oh, okay.
It worked out fine. I mean, I'm, you know, very... One thing about the worship of Isis is that we are very tolerant of different viewpoints. And whereas some other faiths may not exercise the same degree of tolerance, certainly from our point of view, in general, we recognize all faiths as having... positive aspects and good meaning. And I think when ministers of any faith encounter someone that they feel is also concerned about the world in a similar way that they are, it gives us a common ground. We have a lot more in common than we do in terms of differences.
And do you believe that the church, and I mean the church in Rome, and of course, you know, all the other home offices, if you will, have the same kind of much less, shall we say, negative approach these days?
I think there's less negativity than there was, say, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. That's not to say that there's no negativity. I mean, everyone, I think, wants to privately believe that they do have the best path to salvation and the best path to divinity. But overall, I think there is a lot more tolerance of it and a lot more understanding that, you know, for different people on at different places in their spiritual development, that another faith may offer them something that's very crucial.
Hmm.
And so, generally speaking, we encounter a lot of tolerance. And, you know, certainly we, you know, try to accomplish as much as we can in serving those that want to follow our path.
So you're actually enjoying a kind of a renaissance.
I would say so. Certainly there's a lot more tolerance, and there's a lot of people that are establishing centers for that venerate the divine feminine in one way or another, sometimes directly under the name of Isis, but also through many other goddesses. There are some, of course, in the movement that feel that, you know, Isis is the kind of a catch-all name and that she is all goddesses. I see her as a more personal and defined divinity, but that's my point of view. There's many others who see her as an archetype or truly as, you know, one grand umbrella goddess that contains all of them.
So all things considered, you're actually being well-received generally.
Generally speaking, yes.
That's positive. I'm a big believer in, you know, whatever your religion is, it's nobody's business but your own.
Well, I agree. You know, I think that, you know, we are very fortunate to live in a country that at least promulgates the idea of religious freedom to some degree. And I found that, you know, pretty much that if you expect to be accepted, you will be.
Mm.
Now, you know, there will be people that are avid believers in other faiths that can be, you know, a challenge to deal with.
All right.
But most people, fortunately, are not that fanatical.
Well, there you are. To Tracy Regula, for those who wish to get a hold of your book, it's probably best gotten on Amazon.
You can reach it, get it at IsisHousePub.com. That's our Isis House publishing website. And you can also get it through Amazon.com.
All right. In other words, that other thing. All right, Tracy.
That other thing.
Yeah, all right. Tracy, thank you so much and have fun.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rick, and enjoy your evening.
I shall. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And news is coming up with Joe Chiaro on News Radio 850 KOA.